Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restoring the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Okay, so our toll-free number for calling in today, and it will become, since the Olympics are coming up, it might be just apropos to have some phone callers call in. And that number is 844-320-4299. And I'll try to repeat it a few times for you. And if you cannot listen to today's show, it will be rebroadcast on Saturday at 1 p.m. And it will also be rebroadcast on Sunday at 9 p.m. And so this is an educational show, and I'm going to reference some things in this show that I have already mentioned in previous shows, so you may want to download those podcasts, and if you've already got them, then you may want to reload them on some of these things like the National Secular Church and so forth. So you can get those podcasts at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. For local announcements, this Friday, Brady Smith from the Patriot Academy will be hosting the Republican Coffee Club at 7 in the morning. And that admission is $7 now. I believe they're still looking at possibly moving that. And the location meeting, or the location for the meeting, is on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org website's link page. So just go to the links and you will be able to find out where that is and more information on that. In addition, I will be starting my national, if you want to call it, syndicated show on Red State Talk Radio. You can find it at redstatetalkradio.com, and I will be beginning my broadcasting on the 29th of January, and that's a Monday through Friday show, so I'll be pretty tired. Actually, it's only 1 hour a week, or 1 hour a day, and it is from 3 to 4 PST, or Pacific Standard Time, and Eastern Standard Time. That'll be from 6 to 7. So I hope you tune in. That is also a talk show. That's why it's Red State Talk Radio. So you're more than welcome to dial in. And it's not a toll-free number, but who even cares about toll numbers anymore? Because who does not have, and I guess there's a few people out there that, you know, have toll phones, but I just, you know, it's the age of unlimited everything. So anyway, I wanted to do a follow-up, as I did at the end of the year and in every subsequent show. I want to continue to do this because I want to follow up on how we've been manipulated, and building off of the Christmas show, I wanted to give some examples of what the press and the elitists have done in basically getting us to believe in something that's not true. And one of those things is our basic form of government. We are supposed to be a Republican form of government, not a democracy. And as a matter of fact, American republicanism is very unique to just a Republican form of government. Most people can look up the dictionary and say, well, a Republican form of government is a representative form of government. But what we did that was completely different, and it was brought to us by the Connecticut Compromise, or Roger Sherman, when he proposed that the states, being sovereigns, had representation as well. And then they basically duplicated that so that the states would have an equal form of Republican form of government with a bicameral legislation. What that would do is it would create counties in each state. Most all the states had counties anyway, if one has parishes. But what ended up going down is that the counties were sovereigns, and representation was based on the county lines. It was not based on the state lines and the population. So each county had its own representative for its member in the Senate. And the way that was done, it was different between state to state, but most states were actually appointing by their commissioners their senator. And then the county had representation of their rep, or I should say their House of Representative, or what we call a representative in our state legislature, like Representative Shea or Representative McCassell and so forth. Those representatives were elected by those people in that county. They didn't smear county lines. And could you imagine all of a sudden the federal government starting to smear state lines and saying, you know what, because Wyoming doesn't have enough people, we're going to make it bigger so that it consumes some of the other states around it so that it has the appropriate amount. So then we can have the real apportionment for the people for Wyoming. No, they don't do it that way. That's why Wyoming is guaranteed one representative and two senators. It's not by population. It is by the sub-element or the sovereign underneath the government itself. And for the federal government, the states are the sovereigns. And then the states, the counties are sovereign. And that's why we subdivided states by counties. And so these sub-elements are a part of our republicanism and not a part of democracy. And the way we're doing it today, it is a democratic form of government because they are actually smearing. And as a matter of fact, in lots of states, even this one, you'll find that there is one representative for five counties. Or in California, there's 10 counties that have one senator and two representatives. And that is not representative for those counties. Those counties have completely lost their voice and representation in their legislative body of government. The other thing I wanted to bring up was secularism, as far as what we truly believe is the truth and how we've been manipulated into believing that America is a secular type of country. And the reality of secularism is when they used the term secular, that meant non-denominational back in their day. They didn't believe in, you know, godlessness. All of those men were very godly men. And we were a Christian nation, but we were a nation of an amalgamation of different churches. And so instead of dictating which church would be the established church, it was a non-denominational government as far as the federal government, or what they use the term secular. So when you hear them using the term secular, that did not mean that they were godless. That means that they were non-denominational. And so there's plenty of evidence. And if you go back into the radio shows that I've done before, where I've had Mark Erbach on, where we got into the details of this, how this truly is a Christian nation, but we've lost that because we've allowed the progressives to obfuscate that. That is the reality. And that goes down to the same thing of whether you can have religious freedom in America. And I've had this question out there for lots of people that truly believe that there is this thing called religious freedom. That's hogwash. Religious freedom is not something within the Constitution. You have a right for religious expression, and you have a right for speech and assembly, but nowhere in the Constitution does it say religious freedom. Every state in the Union, like I already said, had its own established church, and most every state in the Union also suppressed or banned very specific churches. As a matter of fact, the Jewish faith was not allowed to be practiced in America until the 1800s in most of the states. There was only two states, I believe it was Maryland and Rhode Island, I think were the two states that allowed the Jews to actually openly practice. Muslims and Hindu, they were not allowed to practice in America for over a century. And so this concept of religious freedom is baked in by seculars to try to create this stigma that, you know, the framers were all okay with Satan worshiping. Any kind of religion, as long as it's a religion, is good. And that's not true. And if you read the Northwest Ordinance, they actually get into how important using the Bible in education was a part of that. And that was a part of the law of the land when they established the Northwest Ordinance in 1787. So I don't want to digress too much into the secularism, but the whole thing is that when they use the term secularism, it does not mean anything to what the progressives have labeled it today being godless. Secularism in their day was a non-denominational faith of Christianity. So anyway, the consequences of this religious freedom is really a fallacy. And so I will get into the Establishment Clause next week and what these churches were doing and how the federal government has literally violated the Establishment Clause within the United States Constitution. We have a guest today. See, I got through that pretty quick.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so we have a guest today, and it's Tim Benn, and he was a former city councilman candidate, and he co-hosts a show on Spokane what is it? Rights perspective, Spokane's
Spokane perspective, okay. on the ECN network.
And so I asked him, and I'll ask you to answer this because we're going to be heading into a break in less than a minute or so.
That's right.
And so I want to get into a James Madison article or an essay first before we do that. But I asked him before he came onto the show if he could kind of give me an idea of something or some things that the Constitution protects. And the reason being is I want to emphasize how important it is that we maintain and save and preserve the Constitution. And with that, we will get into that very specific thing, the protections of the Constitution, when we get back after a word from our sponsors. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back with Tim Benn, and he's not the most patient person, but so he'll have to, you got to see him. Where's the webcam?
Right, you need one.
I know he's ready to just bite into the microphone, but before, I want to set some context, because one of the things that we talked about as far as the Constitution protecting things, it protects property. And as a matter of fact, to understand property, you have to basically get into the paradigm of the framers. And there's probably no better framer that can get into this than James Madison. And so as I look at what James Madison provided in 1792 in his essay on property, which I'm going to read a part of this, I always say this before I get into the citations. Are the words of our founding fathers and their documents that I'm citing, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, the words of deceit? Who can we trust is and possesses the truth regarding our Constitution and our property as it is defined? And this is what James Madison says, and I'm quoting, "This term, in its particular application, means that dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in exclusion of every other individual. In its larger and juster meaning, it embraces everything to which a man may attach a value and have a right, and which leaves to everyone else the like advantage. In the former sense, a man's land or merchandise or money is called property. In the latter sense, a man has a property in his own opinions and the free communication of them. He has a property of particular value in his religious opinions and in the profession and practice dictated by them. He has a property very dear to him in the safety and liberty of his person. He has an equal property in the free use of his faculties and free choice of the objects on which to employ them. In a word, a man is said to have a right to his property. He may be equally said to have a property in his rights." So let me ask once again, what does the Constitution protect other than property now that we've got into this?
Well, property is the basis for it, really, a lot of it, because if you can't protect your property, your personal effects, your family, you know, you live in a tyrannical world. And to protect your property, you must have government among men to, you know, employ the protection of those properties.
Right. And in context, very clearly, your opinions, your religious expressions, those you actually have in property rights.
Right.
As he was saying.
And so in electing people, we are electing them as representatives to protect our property rights and fulfill the duties of their office and their oath to the Constitution.
Right. Now, and let me inject here. That's one of the very specific reasons why inside the Constitution, it dictates that all representatives at a federal appointment and even at local appointments, public officials are to take an oath and therefore they are held bound duty by that oath that they will deliver those protections for you in protecting the Constitution and your property.
And the violation of that oath is grounds for recall.
Well,
And removing them from office.
Depending on what the grounds are, because you can even take those grounds to a point of treason, which right. means that when a person deliberately does something that they know will undermine the Constitution and destroy somebody's property rights or what
have you. I have several perfect examples for you.
Sure, absolutely. But what is the punishment for treason?
Well, you know, I don't know that we have punishment for treason for elected officials at this point in time because they seem to get reelected instead of punished.
Well, because they've never been tried and found right. guilty of treason. But if you're tried and found guilty of treason, you can't be hung for that.
Right.
There you go.
Well, not in Washington State because the death penalty has been suspended by our Governor Jay Inslee. And the other thing that he's done recently, and you can look it up in the news, it was just, this last week, the Washington State Department of Licensing. Now this is another reason to do one of the things that you talk about frequently, a republic review of our state and if it's following our state constitution and the U.S. Constitution, because the Department of Licensing was sharing records with ICE, Immigration Enforcement. And in doing so, that kind of angered Jay Inslee and a few of the left, and they said that they will stop allowing Department of Licensing in Washington State from sharing the identities of people they're providing ID for and driver's licenses to ICE. So that tells me that the reason why the federal government is trying to stop us from getting on airplanes is because we are, as a state, handing out licenses to illegal aliens, not immigrants, because if they were immigrating, there's a legal way to do that. So you know,
Jay Inslee is so original. I mean, this guy is brilliant on pushing this progressive policies forward because obviously, you know, this has never been thought of before, like in California.
Right. Well, and there's two ways you can register to vote. One of them uses a Social Security number, and the other one, a driver's license number. So we know that Democrats are bringing in votes, and they're using illegal immigrants that are getting driver's licenses, to do certain activities.
Sure.
And so it's illegal. So that is going on, and the left wants to create laws and policies that violate law so that they can destroy the foundation of our country and Constitution. And I think in doing that, they're basically undermining our nation of laws, and we are slowly becoming a region on the globe that is ruled by the emotional whims of leaders put in power by special interest. And then we can move on into the ordinance passed by city council,
which is really why I wanted to have this conversation. And if you want to dial in, the number is 844-320-4299. If I could say that slower, I would. But anyway, yes. So the city of Spokane passed an ordinance on basically changing the campaign rules for anything within the city of Spokane, not Spokane County.
Just in the city.
Correct.
Just in the city. And I've got a teaser for you because there is breaking news on that today, but I'm not going to tell you what it is till the end of the show. So what we got to dig into now is, do we have to disagree with the leftist ideology? In some ways, we actually don't have to because it disagrees with itself. And in this campaign law, there's actually contradictions, so you can't actually follow it, because which one do you follow? And I find that a lot in the legal system. Now, it's an 18-page ordinance that the city council passed.
And this is available on
the city of Spokane's website.
Okay.
And it's the Fair Elections is one of the things they called it. What
I'll ask you is if you could give me the link to where the documents are, that way people listening can actually go and download this, because there are people that listen from different states and different climes and so forth, and so they may be interested, but they may not know how to get to that. So
to get to the ordinance,
yeah.
Okay, so I'll see if I can grab the link and send it over to you after
the show.
All
right, great, thank you so much.
All right, so their ideology disagrees with itself. So we have in certain places that no candidate for office can accept more than 50% of the state allowable value of donations, which is $1,000 per election.
Is that total? They can only receive $1,000, or is that from an individual?
That's an individual donor.
Okay.
So it's $1,000 in Washington state,
okay,
is the state law. And they say, well, we only want it to be 50% of that. But in another section of their ordinance, it's very interesting to find that they are exempting themselves in some aspects because they are allowing people that already have campaign funds in their pockets to hold on to them and use them.
Interesting. Interesting. So as you can hear, we're coming up on a hard break again. And so we're going to have to pick this back up and get into the details of this new policy, and I should say this ordinance that they just recently passed, as soon as we get back after the break. So folks, please stay tuned and please support our sponsors, and we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you. Okay, so we are back, but before we sink our teeth into some more of this ordinance, I wanted to provide a little news insight. Most people aren't attuned to things that are going on in other states, but actually in the state of South Carolina, Senator Rex Rice and Representative Gary Smith are initiating reviews, but you know, they're basically doing something very similar to my Republic review. But they're just basically identifying all the unconstitutional statutes and laws and so forth. So I've reached out to both of these gentlemen and shared my executive summary with them. And so I'm hoping to be able to have them on, but they'll probably not be on this show. They'll probably be on my Red State Talk radio show. So as I start working with other states within the Republic, you'll probably want to start streaming that and or bringing it in. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, I will give you that information, just like Tim is here with bated breath to give you the information on why the mayor vetoed this first and forced the councilman to go back and provide a majority vote.
That's right. Well, the mayor has a council. You know, he's got his lawyers, and the city council has their council, in McClatchy.
Do the councils counsel the councils?
It is that way. The council's council doesn't listen to the mayor's council because the council's council is Lisa Brown's husband.
Oh,
so
now who's Lisa Brown?
I think she's running for 5th congressional district this time around. She's a former senator.
So
in our
she's
state.
Challenging CMR.
That's correct. That's okay. Correct. But the campaign finance won't apply to them. But wait a minute. Maybe it will apply to them. Is our city residents going to be tied to this campaign finance reform? A lot of gray areas in the law. And so there's some unclear things in it, and that's why the mayor vetoed it. And, you know, he basically saw that clearly there was constitutional issues. Now, the council's council didn't see that, and that's because they have an ideology of thumbing their nose at the Constitution and looking at us as a democracy instead of a representative republic. And so what they did, and the mayor recognized this in his letter regarding this number C-35571 ordinance in the city of Spokane, in his letter, he recognized that it limited small businesses in donating to campaigns that may contract with the city, but it still allows union organizations to donate.
Who have contracts with the city.
Well, and that basically unions.
Is law enforcement unionized?
Well, and
fire, are they unionized?
They're all unionized, you know, and that's the thing. City services are unionized, and so essentially we have a contract with the union, and the union is in many ways the employer, not the city. Or, you know, it depends on the contracts, right? But they're contracted, nevertheless.
Right.
So, but it exempts them in this code. And so what you have is a $50,000 limit that a contractor can have with the city, and then they can no longer donate. But the liability goes on to the candidate. So the candidate has to know whether this person in the last several years has gotten a city contract of some kind, and then they can't donate. Well, how do you know that as a candidate? Are you going to ask for this person's personal taxes and their
probably
business
not.
Taxes?
And you probably don't have that time either.
Yeah, who would have the time to track all this? So it really restricts conservatives, and it also scares people probably from getting involved politically, because what this does is this is the city council going after their opposition, because we have a left-leaning majority. Basically, it's 6-1. Right, we have one conservative.
So they're setting up the rules to give themselves an advantage over any types of challengers that would be able to move the city and the city council in a different direction.
Right, right. And so before we went off into the break, I was talking about the city council and the ideology, the leftist ideology, how we don't have to disagree with it necessarily because so often it disagrees with itself.
Yep.
Well, in this ordinance, we talked about the $500 limit on campaign contributions, or actually 50% of the state level, which is currently $1,000.
Right.
So in the next section, next page of this ordinance, beginning this next year, nothing in this chapter shall in no way allow, in the event of greater for donations of 1.5% of the city of Spokane's median household income. So now they've created another dollar amount. So we're really close to that level right now.
Now, what is the median?
The median household income in Spokane, according to the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey, what I noticed was about $50,000.
Yeah, so, I think it's like 53.
So we're pretty close to this ordinance already violating itself.
Sure, because if it's 53, then that's $30 over the cap. And if it's actually higher than that.
It's 1.5%.
You're right. You know, it is then. That is significant.
It's significant. But we could still meet that threshold. And there's so much gray area in this ordinance. And if you read some of the wording, and I know we don't have time to go over all that today.
Right.
But, you know, the ordinance in itself, as the mayor pointed out, conflicts the Constitution because it's equal access to the law. And tying that to property rights, if you don't have equal access to the law, then someone has more access to your property than you do.
Right.
Because if they can put forward politicians that will raise your taxes, your fees, your fines, and create ordinances that only apply to certain groups but not others, like this campaign Correct. Finance ordinance does, right. We're heading down a very dangerous path where the city could pick and choose, maybe outside of constitutionality, who gets services from the fire department, who gets services, right?
Right.
And that's equal access to the services that we pay for through our taxes. So it's a dangerous direction that we're headed. They exempted the unions, restricted small business. So we already talked about how do candidates know who's restricted? You're not going to know. So you're going to be in violation. And the interesting thing.
Or you could be in violation because you may not have time to check. Somebody may be within the parameters and others may be outliers and you won't be able to differentiate between the outliers and those that are within. I get it.
Right. That's right. And so you don't know. Well, if you are found in violation, like some government entities do, they will sit on a violation. It takes time for them to process. If you are in violation of this code, you can't fundraise anymore. You're not allowed to fundraise until your compliance is cleared. So if they stretch that out a few months, here is a conservative candidate
right.
that got a donation they didn't know they weren't supposed to get, and they cannot fundraise against their incumbent challenger, but the incumbents have exempted themselves.
Interesting. You
know? So, So the incumbents have this war chest that's sitting there right now
right.
that applied to the law the way it used to be.
Right. Well, but technically, within the Constitution, there's this post facto clause. In other words, it's unconstitutional to write a law that basically makes something that was legal before, but once you create this law, it now makes it illegal. You can't post facto make all the other things before
right.
that illegal so that you can throw people in jail, all of your, you know, political enemies and so forth. And so it seems like they're at least aligned with the, they're not doing a post facto type of
they're
thing.
They're not doing post facto. So right. in that extent, you know, what they could do is make the people do new C1s, but it's really out of the ordinary to have campaign finance done at the municipal level anyways. It's typically done at the state level through the Public Disclosure Commission, because that's going to create more confusion as well with your accountants when you have people being your treasurer for your campaign.
So why doesn't the city create its own PDC?
Well, that's what they're doing here, basically. Okay. So you've got the...
So in other words, the good old folks of Spokane are now going to get to pay for the bureaucracy of a second PDC when had these councilmen, council people, left this all alone and left it right. to the state, then the people of Spokane wouldn't have to be paying for extra bureaucracy and having to deal with this. But you know what? You always get for the, you know, you get the government that you let happen to you, either via voting, not supporting the conservative people and protecting your rights and so forth. So Spokane, it seems like they just don't care. They're fair game to letting these people pull the wool over their eyes and hit them with the bats.
Well, that's right. And this is, on its face, it's unconstitutional. The Citizens United decision that was decided by the Supreme Court just a few years back said that money is free speech, and whether you're a union's, an individual, or a business owner, you can donate to campaigns at the very same limit as everyone else. There's no restriction, equal access to the law.
Right.
Well, this violates
sure.
that Supreme Court decision already.
Well, it seems like the best thing to do is for businesses to go ahead and campaigns to go ahead and violate and continue to bring in money and so forth, just to violate this so that the city will then press charges against these individual candidates and hopefully they'll win. But bottom line, it will be solved at a higher up position in court, maybe the Supreme Court again.
Well, it could be challenged now and don't have to wait to run.
Oh, so we'll be right back after a minute from our sponsors. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so we're back. There's probably a lot more to wade through this pile of ordnance that we're kind of shoveling through. And
I'm glad you called it a pile of ordnance and you didn't say something else, because there's somebody else in elected office right now in trouble for words like that.
Oh, okay.
Pile.
But yeah. Sure. So, but, you know, the nice thing about Red State Talk Radio is because it's not necessarily over the airwaves as a source, we can say a little bit more freely what we want to say. But anyway.
Right. Well, what they're turning Spokane into, I would say, is a more of a democracy.
Well, actually, it's more of an oligarchy.
Yeah, a leftist oligarchy. There, yes, you, there go. You go. Yeah. So back to the campaign finance law, because there are a number of things that I'd like to cover, even though I can't go over all of them. We've talked about how there's fines and you can't raise money until you are done being compliant with this agency. Well, there's a catch.
And this is an internal agency to Spokane.
Right. On campaign finance. Now, the way the state campaign finance works is it's pretty much complaint driven. But this ordinance allows for the agency to just decide it wants to go do investigations.
Now, was Lois Lerner involved in any of this language?
I don't have any evidence of that at this time. Okay. So basically what we're looking at is now an agency, the staff can pick on people that they want to pick on and investigate. Now, once you get under investigation, if they found any compliance issues whatsoever, even if it's pretty minimal, like you didn't buy the staples with campaign money, you used your own money and you didn't, you know, I mean, paper clips, whatever.
Right.
So now you cannot go out and raise funds. So let's say the person running for office has friends that are inside of the city of Spokane and they like that person. They're really nice. So they don't want you to get elected. Well, now we're going to investigate you and look for something small, and then we're going to go on vacation.
So what we're talking about is a biased investigation and then deliberate feet dragging,
right,
so that they can literally stifle and stymie anybody that might actually have a good chance in ousting or winning a seat within the city.
That's correct. And this city council that we currently have has already said that they do not want anybody in opposition. They want a unified front, 7-0 votes every time. They don't want Mike Fagan there, who is their dissenting voice. They want no dissenting voices.
They don't want diversity. In other words, they're anti-diversity. I'm just using their words.
Well, that's like I said in the beginning. I let you know their ideology contradicts itself.
Yes.
So we don't even have to disagree with them because they disagree with themselves too frequently.
Sure.
So this ordinance, it's really interesting how they can weaponize this and shut down your ability to run a campaign. There's another little clause in here, too. Now, if they've weaponized this and they want to take their friends to go up against you in the city government, a candidate and political committee or incidental committee may not use campaign contributions. Well, it doesn't say campaign. May not use contributions to pay a fine imposed by the agency. Oh, and by the way, not only do you have to pay fines, but they can issue you investigation fees. So it depends on how much time they take to investigate you. There's no limit in this ordinance.
Right. And so it sounds,
so you got to pay out of pocket, probably.
So it sounds to me like mom and dad can't bail Sonny out or daughter out or what have you.
Right.
You better come with enough money to pay off the what do you call that? The Spanish Inquisition?
Yeah, the fees, fines, and investigation fees. Now, investigation fees can be very expensive. Government employees are paid well. So, you know, who knows where that would go? It's a law that hasn't been tested. Another issue that I forgot to get into was they created another section that violates the other sections that I can't believe I forgot to tell you. But if an individual puts $11,500 into their own campaign, which tells me typically city council candidates don't put money like that in their own campaign. They put in $500-$600 because in politics, you don't want to put too much of your own money out there because you're already campaigning without pay
right.
for 9 months or a year.
Sure.
So nevertheless, you're running against someone that has $11,500. While they put that into your campaign, now it switches over to the state rules and these rules don't apply. Well, if a person has that much money just to throw at a campaign, they probably have wealthy friends too. So now you...
How does this affect PACs, by the way? Because PACs kind of relate to wealthy friends.
Well, PACs are they can still pretty much operate the way they did before.
Okay.
They just have to disclose some of their top donors.
Okay.
So same as it was before, more or less.
Okay.
So it didn't get dark money out of politics like they said. It just got conservative money out of politics. Because now
that's
the liberals
good.
Can do
that,
this.
That's good because they should have a monopoly because, I mean, I believe that their goal, not their penultimate, but their ultimate goal is to convert Spokane into the shining city of Detroit or Baltimore.
It's kind of interesting, yeah, and they're kind of elitist. They say they're for the poor guy, but if a rich guy gets in there that can just dump down thousands and thousands of dollars, he can put $20,000 into his own campaign. Well, now he can go and raise $1,000 donations, and this ordinance no longer applies. You have to play by the state's rules because this guy's got lots of money. So we can kind of see the writing on the wall there. While the rich liberals out there winning campaigns, you can't fundraise because you're being investigated by the agency in the city. So have fun with that out there, folks, if you decide to run. Now, the last thing that's a shocker that just happened today, there's a piece in the ordinance that actually the left put into place that would not allow foreign entities to donate to campaigns. Now, it was pointed out by conservative councilman Mike Fagan that a foreign entity is a native tribe. Now, native tribes donate a lot of money to political campaigns.
Progressive campaigs.
Yes, typically.
You know, and let me explain why they hand out, or I should say, they donate so heavily to the progressives is because the progressives provide the entitlement policies and the entitlement platform so that, in other words, it's a form and it's an innovation on slavery. Because once you get people to start you know, taking from the teat of government, then they lose their will to do for themselves and so forth.
Well, and it's not only that, it's also that the left is more willing to hand over property and, you know, allow them to open up casinos, things like that. So that's kind of where a lot of the money has been coming from recently.
Sure.
The tribes and the casinos. But see, that is a foreign government. So what happened today was that the city council is filing an amendment.
Those casinos don't benefit. Typically, those casinos don't benefit the entire tribe. Most of that money gets skimmed off the top for whomever has concocted these ideas.
Yeah, that is a side issue. There's a lot of that could be a whole other show.
Oh, sure.
But they do donate to local campaigns. And so the left passed this ordinance that was going to restrict one of their donors, and they realized that because a city council member that's a conservative says, wait a minute, these people donate, and that's your friends. They're not going to be able to donate anymore. So as of today, they have now gotten rid of that policy. Well, they're working on it. They've got to pass it. They've filed an amendment, and we know that it's going to pass almost unanimously.
So now they're going to let external or foreign entities back into the campaign. So now Russia, China, all these collusions can occur once again.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Russian collusion. Well, it's really so that they can get that the tribal money. But we'll see how this goes. I know that in the future, it's not likely that we're going to have another conservative elected in Spokane until this law and these lawless leaders are thrown out.
Well, I appreciate your insights on this. I know that this was a real quagmire. There was just a lot of legalese and minutiae that they tried to create. They couldn't create a simple law of a couple sentences or a paragraph.
No.
And I'm not one to judge.
Well, and they said they were getting the gray area out of campaign finance. But what they did was they created a lot more gray.
Of multiple shades of gray. As a matter of fact, technically there's 256 shades of gray, but don't ask me why I know that. And the human eye can only discern 16 at a given time. And so
that's why they're using the full 256. So we can't see what they're doing.
There you go.
Right.
Anyway, I'm not one to judge because as an author, I tend to go overboard in I'm a little verbose, I guess, in my language. What I want to do is I'd like to have you back sometime next month. We can talk more about some political issues and maybe we'll socialize this, a good socializing this out on social media so that we can get some stimulated phone calls for you. Cause I'd like to help you get engaged with your listeners and your base here.
Yeah. I'd love to come back. It's Tim Ben. That's two N's on Ben on Facebook. You can contact me there.
Okay.
And, love to get engaged on local politics.
All right, thank you. And so next week, I am going to get into the National Secular Church and the establishment. I know that we're getting close to almost being out of time, so I want to make sure that you tune in next week, and I am going to give you some details as to how the federal government has actually, underneath our very nose, created a National Secular Church. And so with that, I hope you tune in next week and you can help us reclaim the Republic. And with that, we're out of here. Have a great weekend and a God bless week.
Bye-bye.